Next man up, 102.5, the game, Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Came Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hope everybody out there having a great start to their Tuesday. It was some anxious moments there, waiting to hear if 10 wins is an SEC school you're still in. Anyway. We have confirmation that that will be going away at some point soon.
Yeah,
I said it in July, and I stand by it, that most years, 10 wins, SEC, you're in. Sadly, not this year. Anyway, lots to get into today. Going to talk about the Heisman finalists being announced, including Diego Pavia. We'll talk some Titans. We'll talk some more college football headlines. Of course, Philip Rivers maybe coming back to the NFL. But Nick Frazier, we have to start with just what was that from Jalen Hurts yesterday?
An absolute just – he had his moments where thinking, yeah, this is going to be a good drive, and then craps the bed. Like, obviously, in overtime, that fluky throw to the corner and gets tipped and intercepted, ends the ball game. But a horrible performance. I think that's the best way to put it. A horrible performance for Jalen Hurts.
Well, he very easily could have had another pick early in that game. It just barely hit the turf. The safety, I'm blanking on his name, dove, and it went kind of right through his elbows and hit the ground. So that could have been another one. And I don't think I've ever seen a play like the interception that he threw mid-second quarter or somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Hit a defensive tackle in the chest. And, you know, those big guys, they're not used to carrying the football. So I understand the idea there of, hey, go try and punch it out. And the Eagles got it out right to Jalen Hurts. He picks it back up, and then he fumbles again. And as someone who needed Jalen Hurts to have a pretty big game for a fantasy league with my fiance's family, very disappointing to see Jalen Hurts lose 4 points on that play.
Hey, like I told you before the show, somebody's going to have a bad Christmas gift this year, okay? I can't name names, but hopefully they're nice enough during the holiday season.
Yes, yes. So Jalen Hurts, I mean, it's strange because, right, the two best games I think I've ever seen Jalen Hurts play are the Super Bowls he's played in. Like, he has stepped up in the Super Bowls. Even the one he lost, he might have been the best player on the field that day. I think he ran for two touchdowns, maybe threw for two or three more, and they lost that game. And then he came out and just dominated in the Super Bowl last year in that blowout over the Chiefs. So in the biggest stage, he has stepped up. But, man, yesterday is kind of the culmination of what's just been a really tough season, inaccurate downfield, turning the ball over too much. And for the Eagles, you can't really move on from him, right? Like, you've extended him. He's won you a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But you're looking at it and saying, I don't know if that guy can win for this team moving forward.
He's a mixture of a game manager slash, it's like a Taysom Hill and Russell Wilson put together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there.
It's kind of hard to depict what Jalen Hurts really is. Like, when I watched him play last night, it reminded me of flashes when he went from Alabama to Oklahoma. It just, he had his quirks of had the uh-oh moments. And I've also heard online and read some stuff that Jalen Hurts has a little bit of Aaron Rodgers in him. And I'm not talking about play on the field. I'm talking about mentally checking plays at the line. Like, if their game plan is to throw the ball 45-50% of the time, more than likely he's going to say, hey, you know what, we're going to run the ball. Like, that was the whole words from A.J. Brown,
right,
a few weeks ago. Like, what? Why the lack of play? And he goes, well, Saquon, you can say the same thing about him. Like, I was just taking a jab at Saquon and also Hurts, because Hurts is the, air quotes, game manager for the Eagles.
Yeah, I like the comparison there because they have put the perfect situation around him, right? Like, that offensive line, Lane Johnson not healthy right now, but when that offensive line is healthy, they're one of the best units in the league. Jordan Mailata is great at left tackle. They've historically had good interior offensive linemen. You've also got Dallas Goedert at tight end, and then you've got great wide receivers with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Oh, and last year you had the best running back in the league. And guess what? They won the Super Bowl. They went out, and Jalen Hurts did enough throughout that season and made plays when they needed him to in the playoffs. But if you put Jalen Hurts on the Tennessee Titans today, does this team have more than two wins?
No.
Like, does Jalen Hurts elevate the Titans? I don't think so. And I don't think he elevates the Eagles, and that's a big reason why they're kind of middle of the pack this year.
You can make the argument that the Titans would be worse with Jalen Hurts. Like, the record might be worse. Like, even though the Titans have two wins, you put Jalen Hurts out there against Cleveland, They're not winning that ball game.
I don't know. Jalen Hurts at least has the experience, and he at least has the threat of being able to run the ball. Like, I don't know if the Titans are worse with Jalen Hurts, but are they significantly better? No, and I think that's where you look at the top tier of quarterbacks in the NFL, and I know after he won the Super Bowl, there were a lot of people trying to say, Jalen Hurts deserves to be in that conversation with Mahomes and Allen and Burrow and Jackson, and he just doesn't. Like, when you put him in an elite situation, he can be good enough to get you to a Super Bowl. And guess what? You can't say that about a lot of quarterbacks in the league. He is still a guy that the Eagles are going to build around, even though he hasn't been very good this year. But he is not that type of player like those four guys I mentioned who, no matter what you put around him, they're going to produce and they're going to help you win football games.
Yeah, and I want to go back a little bit to that Titans comparison. If Hurts was on this team currently, Titans team that is, you look at some of those collapsing pockets with Cam Ward back there. To me, if it's Jalen Hurts, he's going to just fall under pressure because that's a guy that, yeah, he can evade the pocket, but you got to remember what he's evading the pocket with in Philadelphia is a better offensive line. And I'm not trying to discredit like a guy like Peter Skoronski or whatever, but we've all seen this team this past year, and it's just been horrendous to watch. And that pocket has collapsed within like 4 or 5 seconds. I mean, it's just bad.
Yeah, and I know there might be some people out there who, you know, I say Patrick Mahomes, he's in that elite group and elevates people. Obviously, he's done it in the past. But yeah, they're 6-7 right now. Guess what? if you flip Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes, I think the Chiefs might be like 3-10. I think if you put Patrick Mahomes on the Eagles, they're probably the best team in football.
100%. And we all know this. Mahomes elevates players around him, whereas if you're Jalen Hurts, other players around him elevate his game.
Yes.
It's just the opposites.
Really strange game last night. Chargers win it in overtime. The Eagles continue to have a turnover problem, a Jalen Hurts problem, and they end up falling. Are they now 7-6?
8-5.
8-5. Yep. Okay. And so they're still going to be a playoff team.
Yep.
But you know, I don't know if I see them going very far considering the way they've been playing. Starting with the Tennessee Titans here. We'll start with some Titans, then we'll get into the Heisman candidates that were announced last night. Cam Ward after the game on Sunday. You could tell that he wasn't exactly thrilled with his performance despite the win, and there's been a lot made of it about Cam Ward being a little bit, you know, somber in the post-game press conference and saying, we'll hear the audio coming back in the next segment. And the question has been asked, is it selfish? Is that somebody who cares more about their own personal achievements than the team? Or is that somebody who can look at that win and say, yeah, we won, but we didn't play our best football? And wanting to hold the team to higher standards. I can see it both ways, but I think that's the question that's being asked out there. Is Cam Ward more worried about his own personal achievements than the team, or was that a quarterback who realizes that that performance isn't going to win them games continuously and sustainably and was trying to hold his team to a higher standard?
Mm. I just looked at that game as Cam Ward tried to elevate his game around a Shador Sanders type game, if that makes sense. Because everybody saw how Cam Ward played. It wasn't the best. It wasn't like highlight moment, watch material football. Whereas you look at Shador Sanders, and you got to remember what rank of defenses you're going up against. I think that's the big issue for me is that like people try to compare Shador to Cam. Obviously, they're friends. But if it's Cam Ward kind of trying to compare himself or just trying to elevate himself, I think that's why. He just, I think, was outmatched by the statistics of the game, and that's simply it.
Did you see the Shador and Cam jersey swap after the game?
Yeah, I think what Cam said, you threw like 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, that's going to be sold on eBay or something like that.
Yeah, and Shador was like, I've got to make it through the season. Like, I'm not like, I'm like, Shador, you're still making like very good money for the average person.
Yeah.
And guess what? Your dad is primetime Deion Sanders. I think you'll be okay.
And you have a Nike deal. You're good.
I think Shador Sanders can live and doesn't have to sell Cam Ward's jersey on eBay.
That's terrible.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you want to chime in, you can text or call. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Quickly, Matthew in Nashville asks, how do you feel about Franklin bringing over all these Penn State guys he coached with, Jake, especially the rehiring of Pry after he got fired 3 months ago? Nick and I were just talking about this.
That's hilarious,
with
by the
Brent
way.
Pry
I didn't know that was
back.
Possible.
I had heard that he was going to come back on as an analyst. He didn't want to move his kids out of Blacksburg. He was getting paid the buyout money. He was going to stick around and just help out. And then it came down that he was going to be the defensive coordinator, and I think that is just hilarious. You fire the guy 3 months ago, and I mean, it helped with the transition, right? You can probably retain some of the good players who were on the last team. Maybe some of the recruits that he brought in are more willing to stay. So I get it. And Brent Pry was an established defensive coordinator at Penn State for a long time under James Franklin. But it is hilarious that you sometimes will see the rare, like Jeff Lebby is going back to be Mississippi State's defensive coordinator, yeah. Which it happened.
Zach Arnett.
Oh, sorry, Zach Arnett, yeah. Under Jeff Lebby. Sorry. Yes. No, Zach Arnett is going to be the defensive coordinator. Same situation, but there's some time removed there.
Yeah.
To do it the next season after you got fired is pretty hilarious.
It is pretty funny. I mean, look, and no discredit to Virginia Tech in this situation, but the expectation for them is if they go 9-10 wins, that's good. Like, you're not, I mean,
right.
Obviously you want to go national championship level. We get all that. But for Brent Pry to kind of recover his career that way, I think everybody's happy.
No,
every situation.
It's what I tell every Virginia Tech fan is that Frank Beamer was James Franklin. He 9 or 10 wins, couldn't win the big game, and they built him a statue outside of Lane Stadium. James Franklin, if he just does what he did at Penn State, he is going to be a legend in Blacksburg.
There you go.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll continue to talk about Cam Ward on the other side. Later in the hour, Diego Pavia is headed to New York City. He will be a Heisman finalist. Can he take home the trophy on Saturday? And much more throughout the show. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday morning. Next man up, 1025 The Game. That was Cam Ward after the game on Sunday. Little snippet of his feelings after the 31-29 win over the Browns. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. And we were having the conversation in the last segment about, is Cam Ward just holding his team to a high standard, or is he more worried about his stat line and his battle with Shedeur Sanders than the team actually winning? And I'm not trying to take a stance on this one way or another, because I think there's probably a little bit of both. I think he was disappointed in, you know, that's his friend. They trained together, and Shedeur Sanders pretty obviously outplayed him on Sunday in Cleveland. But I think it also is a little bit of, you know, exactly what he said there. Winning hides a lot of things. The Titans almost blew that game in that fourth quarter. And you do have to hold the team to a higher standard. When you're 1-11 and you win a game, that doesn't mean everything is magically fixed. So I think it's a little bit of both from Cam Ward. I think there was disappointment in his own personal performance, especially with all of the eyes on it. But I think it also is Cam Ward trying to be a leader and saying, hey, just because we won that game doesn't mean we are a better team yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Cam Ward, maybe he just has a high standard for himself, being a zero-star recruit out of high school and
sure.
Going to multiple places in college. But you come to the NFL, I think all that's out the window. Sure, you can still carry that as a chip on your shoulder. But again, you're right. You go to the game and you think about the Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward comparisons. And I'll reiterate, like I said last segment, like Shedeur Sanders went up against one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Whereas you look at the Titans, went up what against the number two defense right now in the NFL,
yeah.
Something like that. So again, what the Titans did against Myles Garrett, kudos to them. They suppressed him in pass block, rushing, offense.
They had a great game plan for Myles Garrett, which I was pretty surprised by.
Yeah, and it wasn't even on Latham's side for the majority of the time. It was on Dan Moore Jr.'s side,
yeah.
Which I was surprised in. And Ali Udoh, I think it was on the 65-yard run. Ali Udoh was in for that, and I thought it was Latham. It wasn't. I think Titans did get away with a little bit of a hold. There's a little bit of hook in there, but besides the point.
There's holding on every play in the NFL.
Exactly. But, again, to the point of Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, what the Titans offensive line did against Myles Garrett, kudos. And you think, for Cam Ward's sake, that's a plus. Sure, there have been some negatives in that game, but you got to find the small things to build off of, and I think that's where his mindset is, whereas maybe for other people you're thinking, well, it was a terrible game. Like you said, wins can hide a lot of bad things, but I think there are more positives than negatives. I really do.
Yeah, overall for the Titans, 100%. Seeing Tony Pollard have a resurgence like that, the offensive line actually looking competent. I mean, one sack allowed against that defensive line and Myles Garrett, and it came on a stunt. Like, it wasn't like Myles Garrett just straight up one-on-one beat somebody. They had to wrap him around to get to Cam Ward.
Yeah, he was lined up in the C gap and then wrapped around into the A right. gap. I'm just like, whoa.
So it was a really well thought out and well executed game plan against Myles Garrett. We talked yesterday about the rep from Elik Iyemanner on the chip, just knocking Myles Garrett on his ass. That was impressive stuff. And really well done by the Titans. I think overall, you can look at that game as a big step forward for the Titans. But for Cam Ward, it wasn't. Yes, as there has been all year, there's moments. Both touchdown passes I thought were really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first one, good pocket movement, found some space, made an accurate throw on the run to Elik Iyemanner, wide open for a touchdown. Chim Dike, that's an opposite hash dart that he throws on an out route to Chim Dike. Well done. The throw to Van Jefferson on third and long, where it hit him in the hands and he dropped it. Great throw. But we're talking about moments instead of games. And that's where I think the development needs to come for Cam Ward. We need to come out of one of these final four games saying, Cam Ward looked good all day long. The ball placement was good. He got the ball out quickly. And he made the right decisions. So far, I would guess the Seahawks game might be the only one where we've come out of it and thought he played a pretty complete game. Otherwise, it's been
Denver week one. Let's not forget about
yeah,
that.
But Denver there was it was his first game, and I wouldn't have said that was a complete game. I think he played a lot better than the stats showed in that game.
That's fair. I think if Ridley makes a lot more of those catches that
we're
throwing,
right? Maybe we're talking differently about it.
Exactly. That's kind of how I look at it.
But there hasn't been enough games where we come out of it and, you know, I flip the TV over to Red Zone at 3 o'clock and say, man, Cam Ward played a great game. There's been a lot of games where I'm like, yeah, Cam Ward had some really good moments in that game. Or Cam Ward played great in the second half of that game. We need to see Cam Ward have a game where he goes out, he executes the game plan, he makes accurate throws, and it doesn't have to match up statistically. Like, there is some of the stuff that is out of his control. Like, we talk about the Broncos game. He hit Calvin Ridley in the hands 3 or 4 times, and he dropped it. But you'd like to come out of a game and be like, Cam Ward completed 70% of his passes for 225 yards and 2 touchdowns and didn't turn the ball over. Just have one of those games. It would build confidence for him, and I think would build confidence for the organization that, hey, this is moving in the right direction for Cam Ward. Let's build around him and go find a coach who can maximize his abilities.
Yeah, and if you look at that Cleveland game for Cam, there were some, I guess you could say, tight window throws. Like, there was that the interception over the middle by the linebacker for Cleveland.
Yeah, Devin Bush.
Tried to flick it over him a little bit, and it was more on a tight line, and it just didn't work well.
That one was just – I give Jim Schwartz credit for that. That is just making a rookie quarterback make a mistake. They went all-out blitz but dropped one of the linebackers right into the passing lane, and that's a mistake that rookie quarterbacks are going to make. I give Jim Schwartz a lot of credit for – basically just knowing exactly what's going through a rookie quarterback's head and making him make that mistake. That's one of the first interceptions he's thrown this year where he clearly just didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his interceptions have been inaccurate throws or miscommunications or something like that. But I'm hoping in the next 4 weeks, you're looking at the defenses that you're playing. Like, the 49ers have talent on their defense, but no Fred Warner. No Nick Bosa. Maybe he takes a step forward this week. The Chiefs, their defense has been pretty good. Mm-hmm. But then you got the Saints, the Jaguars. We saw how that went. I mean, it was maybe one of his worst games of the year. But one of these games, I just want to come out of it and see Cam Ward played a complete game. Not just a quarter, not just a half, not just a moment and a throw here and there. A complete game where we can come out of it and say, that is what it's supposed to look like from Cam Ward.
Yeah, and you look at that Saints game coming up in a few weeks. Like, that's the game, for me, you're going to see that complete game, air quotes, for Cam Ward. Like, right now, you could probably see some, again, you talk about moments. You could see the moments in possibly a Kansas City game or the Jacksonville game of some regards. But for me, if you want to see a full, complete game out of Cam Ward, you hope it's against the Saints, because that's a team that, again, is the top 5 spot right now for one of the worst teams. So, as for Cam, I think he can build off of the Cleveland game. I would, again, there are a lot more positives than negatives in my eyes. If this offensive line can stay competent for Cam Ward in one of these games so he can have an actual complete game to go off of. I think that's what your biggest worry is.
Well, and I think the offensive line, that has to be a confidence builder for those guys, right? Like, we talked about J.C. Latham losing confidence in himself, and I'm not sure he had an amazing game against Cleveland, but to go in there when everybody's telling you that you're going to give up 4+ sacks to Myles Garrett and to only give up one, that's got to at least get the good feelings going back in that offensive line room a little bit.
Absolutely. And it's adversity in J.C. Latham's mind right now because, look, I've heard it on previous shows and just in weeks past that J.C. Latham hasn't had much adversity through his career.
Man, TD brings it up all the time. Like, you play at IMG Academy in Alabama.
Yeah.
You don't lose very often.
No. And obviously, you go from left tackle to right tackle in the NFL. It's a complete different, I guess you'd say, position in some aspects. Still has some of the same intangibles. But, again, you're learning something new. I mean, because right tackle in high school is different from right tackle in the NFL. You know, that's as simple as that. So, I mean, if Latham can kind of get that, like you're talking about confidence again, and just be himself. Go back to the Latham of old where you're running sprints in the thunderstorms. Like, let's do that. Because right now it's just slowly getting there. That's how I'm going to put it, just slowly getting there.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Quickly, Lenny on the text line. Cam has asked, dude, it's obvious Cam is not that player. I have never seen an NFL fan base hate their own rookie quarterback more than this. And hate maybe is a strong word.
Dislike.
But root against their own quarterback like this. Like, have a little bit of belief that he can turn it around. The Titans were not the only team that wanted to draft Cam Ward number one overall, right? Like, it hasn't looked the way we hoped it would in year one. But to say it's obvious that Cam is not that player, as in a franchise quarterback, it's way too early to say that. I told you during the break, if Cam Ward comes out next year and through a month and a half, 6 weeks, still looks like the same guy and isn't developing, I will gladly admit that I was wrong about Cam Ward. But to make that determination when his play caller changed 3 weeks in, his head coach changed 6 weeks in, he has almost no help around him, and he's played 13 games in his NFL career, it's ludicrous to say that he is obviously not that player. We don't know what Cam Ward's going to be. Yes, he's disappointed this year, but we have no idea. You cannot make any grand declarations about what Cam Ward is going to be at this point in his career.
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to compare him to Marcus Mariota at all, but you look at that situation he was in with the Titans. He had, what, 4 different offensive coordinators in 4 different seasons?
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying it's the same thing, apples to apples, but it has some of the same qualities in some aspects. The fact that there's something new every year for Cam, it's almost like there's something new every other week.
Right.
So you got to give it some time.
Lenny says being drafted first does not make you great. No, but saying that multiple teams wanted to come up and take Cam Ward number one overall means that the NFL as a whole viewed him as worthy of that top pick.
Yeah.
It's not like the Titans picked a third round worthy player at number one and the whole league laughed at them. Other teams wanted Cam Ward. We'll see what he turns into when he gets a better coach and better pieces around him.
And I'll say this about Cam Ward and the draft process and whatnot. And this is at the NFL as a whole right now. Look at the quarterback position. There is a need for decent quarterbacks. And look, Cam Ward, I think, was the better of the litter in this previous draft. You look at this upcoming year's draft, there might be one or two possibly good quarterbacks. And the point I'm trying to make is there is a lack of quarterback production in this league. You look at the Steelers going for Aaron Rodgers at 42 years old. We'll get into it eventually. The Indianapolis Colts have no quarterback right now.
Right.
And they're talking about 44-year-old Philip Rivers.
Who hasn't played in the league in 5 years.
Exactly. So, look, there's a lack of quarterback production, and if you can focus on the young talent of rookie quarterbacks in this league, I think you'll be okay.
And I will never blame a GM or a front office if they are convicted on a quarterback and they have the number one overall pick. You take that quarterback. A franchise quarterback is worth whatever you could get in a trade. And maybe he doesn't turn into it, but if the GM was convicted on it, you take the quarterback, and if the quarterback fails, you get fired. That's how it works. 615-737-1025. Let's quickly go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rick is on the line wanting to chime in. Rick, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
You bet, guys. Hey, listen, one thing, the Texer, or basically anybody, in my opinion, who is ready to write off Cam Ward is absolutely idiotic. Did anybody watch Patrick Mahomes last night, or basically Patrick the entire year? And Patrick Mahomes is still one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but he doesn't. His numbers don't show that this year, and why? It's not Patrick. It's the people around him. He's got receivers dropping passes. His offensive line isn't there. They have virtually no running game. And Patrick Mahomes, you know, is throwing interception, ill-advised passes, and that's the best guy in the league. And here we've got a rookie with, you know, all these changes you guys talked about and a very mediocre team around him. So for him showing any improvement is just amazing to me. And then also, a strike one against you guys, I don't know if you're going to get this, gee, we got a really complete game from Cam. Why? Because the guys around him are going to have a complete game too.
And that's
so,
fair.
You know, that's you can't if he doesn't have a complete game, you can't say, well, hell, it's all because of him. He may make mistakes for sure, but we just can't expect too much. Now, there are some areas that will be pretty obvious that you'd like to see him do better on. But anyway, I just I have a lot of hope for the young man. And I think he's going to be a great quarterback for us. There you go.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Great stuff from Rick. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get back into the Titans later on. But big news yesterday, Heisman finalists were announced, and Diego Pavia is one of them, along with Fernando Mendoza, Jeremiah Love, and Julian Sain. We will talk about those Heisman finalists and Diego Pavia's case on the other side. Also, did somebody get snubbed from a trip to New York? We'll get to that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, starting on Thursday between noon and 3 p.m. Chase and Big Joe will have your chance to win a $100 Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa, $100 gift card, and qualify to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. It's the 12 days of Christmas on 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you. Talk some Titans to start the show. We'll talk some more two-tone blue later on. But into the Heisman finalists, which were announced yesterday. Fernando Mendoza, Diego Pavia were the obvious ones. Also, Julian Sain and Jeremiah Love going to be going to NYC. Looks like it's going to be a two-horse race. Is it Mendoza? Is it Pavia? After the Big Ten championship, the odds went way up for Fernando Mendoza. Heavy favorite. Sort of starting to come back to earth, making there an okay chance that Diego Pavia wins. And I think it's going to be Mendoza. I said this yesterday. I think it should be Pavia. But I think the national aspect of the award, like, I think if you polled SEC voters, Pavia wins in a landslide. But the most national people covered that Big Ten championship game and watched that Big Ten championship game and saw Fernando Mendoza slay the giant in Ohio State with a couple of big throws down the stretch, and that is his quote-unquote Heisman moment. But if you look at the stats, I think Diego Pavia deserves to win it, and we'll see. I don't think we're going to know until that card is read on Saturday night.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, you look at the Big Ten championship game, and I think a lot of people are starting to get enamored about this one specific play, and it was that third down conversion on that far hash that Mendoza threw to Charlie Becker.
Yeah, the fade to the Nashville kid.
Yeah. Follerine alum right here. Proud to be an Irish. There we go. He was a Follerine guy myself. So I think a lot of people are getting enamored with that one play because that, to me, I think was the Heisman moment for Mendoza. I mean, you look at Pavia, and you're right, Jake. The numbers speak for itself. I mean, he is, what, almost 1,000 more yards total over Mendoza around that number?
It's 800-ish now, okay. But Mendoza played an extra game.
Right.
And Mendoza also, for those people out there, we got somebody saying yesterday that, oh, Mendoza didn't finish half of his games. Neither did Pavia, and Mendoza played more snaps than Diego Pavia did.
Yeah.
Pavia, I think, threw the ball like 20 or 30 more times than Mendoza, but same yards per attempt, and Diego had 500-plus more yards on the ground.
Yeah, and let's not forget the one game that Pavia set the passing record. He even asked Clark Lee, can I just continue this game? I could set a bigger record. And I think, again, not holding it against Clark Lee or anybody else, that if he would have let him play a little bit more, I think that would have solidified the Heisman.
Yeah, I think Diego, you got to look at the November performances from Diego Pavia.
Yeah.
And it's a whole year award. It's not just how you finish, but down the stretch when Vanderbilt needed to win every game left on their schedule, They had to beat Auburn, and they fell behind early. They had to beat Kentucky and get style points, and they had to go into Knoxville and beat Tennessee. Diego Pavia played his best football. And people might say, oh, he threw two interceptions early against Tennessee. Look at that second half.
Corrected his wrongs.
Right. He came back and lit up that Tennessee defense for the last 30 minutes of that game. It's Fernando Mendoza is a deserving winner if he wins it. I'm not going to say that Diego Pavia got it robbed from him because Fernando Mendoza put up great stats. He took Indiana to a 13-0 season and the number one seed in the college football playoff and won their first Big Ten championship in 80 years. Fernando Mendoza this year is a deserving winner of the Heisman. I just think Diego's more deserving with what he did. And it can't be the only argument, but we bring it up all the time of if you put Pavia and Mendoza on each other's teams, does Diego Pavia still go 13-0 with Indiana? I would think so.
Yeah. The way Cignetti has revolved that defense around the quarterback, absolutely.
Right. And does Vanderbilt go 10-2 with Fernando Mendoza on their team instead of Diego Pavia?
I think it's a little worse.
I don't think so. And it's a very hypothetical argument, so it can't be the only one you have, but it's not the only one you do have. Pavia's stats are better. They are. And Pavia, I think, just meant more to his team than Fernando Mendoza. Mendoza, a great player on a great team. Diego Pavia, a great player on a very good Vanderbilt team. But without Diego Pavia, do we think Vanderbilt is 10-2 and in the college football playoff conversation?
Absolutely not. They're a 7-5, 7-6 record,
right,
in my opinion.
I think it's going to be really close. Like, Genty and Hunter was close last year, but I think you kind of knew heading into the ceremony it was going to be Travis Hunter.
Yeah, and again, this could be another Heisman moment. Like, great comparison, by the way, Genty and Hunter, because everybody thought Ashton Genty was the runaway favorite. But we all get two-way players very rare in college nowadays, and having a guy like Travis Hunter who's electric like that, yeah, deservingly so. But as for a guy statistically, Genty should have won that thing hands down. And I think it's the same case for Diego Pavia, because look, if the voters treat this like the college football playoff committee, this could be very sour for Vandy fans.
Yeah,
really.
It would stink to be snubbed twice. Keegan on the text line says, as much as Pavia deserves it, I just can't see a world where the quarterback of the number one undefeated team doesn't win it. I even think Pavia is a better quarterback overall, especially in the locker room, just too much hype around undefeated Indiana. And I think that's – he played most recently.
Yep.
He got the last statement to the voters, and it was a good one. And Indiana is the best team in the country. I think Fernando Mendoza is going to win, but I think Pavia should. I saw – On Pardon My Take, Barstool podcast, PFT commenter said, Fernando Mendoza and Diego Pavia are the angel and the devil on the Heisman voters' shoulders right now, which I think is the perfect way to put it. Like, Fernando Mendoza is kind of this, like, quirky,
squeaky clean guy.
That squeaky clean guy. Like, you look at that post-game interview, and he's just like, it's...
We wanted him for the team. Did you not see it?
How about the flippin' Hoosiers?
Yeah.
Like, he replaced the F-bomb with flippin'.
Right. On live TV, he said flippin'. Diego Pavia did not say flippin' last year when they beat Alabama.
Mendoza reminds me a lot of Philip Rivers. He has that Philip Rivers vocabulary. Never cursed.
Right. Right. I think that is the perfect example of, after the biggest wins of their career, they beat the number one team in the country. Mendoza said flippin'. Diego did not say flippin'. And I wonder if that factors in a little bit of Diego Pavia is the more brash, out in your face, did the Heisman post 7 times this season. Like, I think that might play a factor in it too. But I think it's just it might just be pick your flavor for these voters. And sadly, I think with the way the end of the season unfolded, I think Mendoza is going to have a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, look, if that does come into factor about the way you present yourself, and again, there's been the conversations of his family and whatnot. Look, you can't control what your family does in the stadium. I'm sorry.
Right.
Sure, they may get in trouble with the law. Sure, you may be going to Knoxville before you go to New York. But besides that, you pay your dues and you go about your day. Okay, you can't help that.
I want to see the family's reaction in New York if he wins it or if he loses it.
He said in Texas they had like 80 Pavia family members. So imagine how many guests they'll have in New York.
Get ready, NYPD. You might have some drunken public arrest to make.
There you go.
615.
$1 pizza.
737-1025 is the phone number. The four finalists announced, Mendoza, Pavia, Love, Sayin. There's one guy who I think a lot of people are saying was snubbed, and we'll talk about it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly. Next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly. Preds fans, Smashville Live returns tomorrow night at 6 p.m. on 102.5 The Game, live from Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Meet your Predators players up close and personal, and also get autographs and pictures. Preds players player guests are Luke Evangelista and Nick Blankenberg. That's tomorrow night at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue and only on 102.5 The Game. Talking Heisman finalists, Diego Pavia, Fernando Mendoza, Julian Sayin, Jeremiah Love, all going to New York City. Jacob Rodriguez, the linebacker for Texas Tech, is not. And I saw a lot of people out there thinking that he should have gotten the invite. And I tend to agree with them. It's going to be very difficult for a true defensive player to win the Heisman Trophy. That's just the way the award has gone the last few years. Travis Hunter won it last year, but he was not a pure defensive player. He played both ways. Jacob Rodriguez, I think, was deserving of an invite. When you get the chance to invite a defensive player, I think you should. He won the Butkus Award, first Butkus Award winner in Texas Tech history. This year, he had 7 forced fumbles and 4 interceptions, responsible for 9 forced turnovers this year, and also has over 100 tackles and 10 tackles for loss. Again, probably doesn't deserve to win it, but I do enjoy, you know, when Manti Te'o got the invite to New York, when Ndamukong Suh got the invite to New York. When you have a defensive player who is putting up a season like that, they may not win it, but I think it is nice to at least invite them and give them that experience, considering the Heisman has, for better or for worse, become a quarterback award in 9 out of 10 years.
Yeah, looking at Manti Te'o's stats, because that's kind of what brought, you know, to my brain, looking at his stats comparing to Jacob Rodgers, Manti Te'o had a total of like 113 tackles. I mean, they're pretty similar stats. I mean, he has 114. Jacob Rodgers does 1 sack. Te'o had 1.5 sacks. 7 interceptions for Manti. I think that's kind of what got him over the hump. Jacob has 4. So, I mean, look, it's unfortunate for Jacob Rodriguez to get snubbed in the Heisman case because you have other good players like a Jeremiah Love who's put together a really good season with Notre Dame. And then, obviously, quarterbacks kind of run all of football in a roundabout way, so that's kind of another unfortunate task for him. But yeah, kudos to him for just putting together a great performing season. I mean, it's not over yet. They're in the playoff, so
right. They got a bye too.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the quarterfinal matchups that I'm most excited for, because, you know, credit to James Madison for getting into the playoff. Don't think they're going into Autzen Stadium beating Oregon. Texas Tech Oregon's going to be a great game.
Shootout.
Yeah, I mean, the defenses are both good, but I think the offenses are going to have a big day. I'm excited for that one. Also, we were just talking about Fernando Mendoza. Indiana versus either Alabama or Oklahoma is going to be an interesting one, too.
If Alabama can get past Oklahoma, I could see that Indiana game going either way. I really could.
I think that's going to be a pick 'em. Like, I don't know if you can, Indiana may be favored a little bit. It's in the Rose Bowl. That's going to be – that side of the bracket is the more interesting one, I think. I think you're almost guaranteed on the other side, and this is nothing against Ole Miss or A&M or Miami. I think you're almost guaranteed to have a Georgia-Ohio State semifinal on the other side.
Yeah.
The 1-4-5-8 side of the bracket, I think any of those 5 teams we just mentioned, or 4 teams, could get through. Oregon, Texas Tech, Indiana, Alabama, Oklahoma. So 5 teams.
5.
I think any of those 5 teams on that side of the bracket, JMU's the only one I don't think, could make it to the national championship game.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that Georgia-Ohio State matchup. It will ultimately probably happen in the semifinals. Like, after watching the Big Ten championship game, obviously it was just a fluke of a kick that missed their opportunities to win
right.
it. Or just tie it, that is. I got to give the edge to Georgia. They've just been...
They're playing great football right now.
They just play football when it matters. And that, I mean, you could say that they have a similar regular season in how they've kind of managed it, with like in comparing it to Ohio State, because Ohio State, you could say, had a Disney-esque season where they just kind of coasted their way through to the playoff.
Right.
Georgia kind of had that, but once it got to the SEC, they played meaningful football. and they knew when to flip the switch. Whereas you look at the Big Ten matchups, I think Ohio State's only big win over a ranked team at the time was like, I mean, not
they
just,
beat Texas.
Yeah, Texas, but you look at Illinois, I think they were ranked 9th at the time, and obviously Michigan at the end of the season. But those ranked wins don't compare to the SEC, and I'm not trying to make the SEC-Big Ten comparison, but it just maybe Ohio State's that good. Or Indiana kind of exposed some flaws that they have.
Yeah, and with Georgia, early in the season, they didn't look like your typical Kirby Smart Georgia team. Like, you probably should have lost to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You did lose to Alabama. The Auburn game was the game with the very controversial fumble at the goal line that could have put Auburn up, what, 17-3?
Mm-hmm.
And you maybe lose that game. You beat Florida 24-20, a bad Florida team. Like, early in the season, really the first two-thirds of the season, this team didn't look very good. But then you blow out Texas 35-10. You beat Georgia Tech. You blow out Alabama in the SEC championship game. This Georgia team's playing really good football. And I think that just like the Georgia-Ohio State semifinal game we got back in 2022,
mm-hmm.
That leaked into 2023, I think that is going to be maybe the game of the playoffs.
Absolutely. And I just hate how the committee formulated the playoff bracket that way to where it would be a semifinal matchup.
Well, it kind of had to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, it did. I look back at what really made me mad was the Texas A&M and Ole Miss flip-flopping this 6 and 7 rankings.
Yeah.
Because, like, to me, it should have been the opposite.
Right. And it's a big, big difference of A&M has to play Miami.
Yeah.
Ole Miss plays Tulane.
And one of those teams has to end up playing at some point.
Well, right. They're going to move on. The winner of A&M Miami gets Ohio State. The
right.
winner of Ole Miss Tulane gets Georgia.
Georgia.
So, yeah, I agree. I guess the one thing I would say is the only thing that you could have done to change Georgia and Ohio State would have been to drop Ohio State to 4 and move Texas Tech up. And then maybe you get Indiana-Ohio State rematch in the semifinals instead of the national championship.
I would have liked that, honestly. I would have liked that a little bit better because then you have Ohio State, they get their vengeance. They get everything they need, you know, the validation for Ohio State fans. But nobody really, to me, I like seeing really good football. I know you do too. Everyone
yep.
else does. I don't want to see that in the semifinals. I don't want to see a Georgia-Ohio State. I would like to see that be a potential national championship game.
I got to say, SEC fans, and I know we get called SEC homers here and there,
uh-huh.
we will never hear the end of it if it ends up a semifinal of Oregon, Indiana on one side and Ohio State, Georgia, and then Ohio State beats Georgia. So you get an all Big Ten national championship and they win it for the third straight year. Yeah, we'll never hear the end of it. So if you're an SEC fan, you don't want Dr. Locke calling in and and giving it to you. Go Georgia,
yeah.
Because they might be the real I think Georgia.
Maybe A&M.
I don't know if I believe in A&M.
Yeah.
Honestly, I want to say Alabama, but they haven't looked very good lately. Maybe they snap out of it. But, yeah, Georgia might be the only realistic threat for the SEC to go win a national championship. And 5774 makes a good point on the text line. Georgia's the second youngest team in the SEC, playing almost 60% first and second year players.
Kirby said, look, you guys can't have the car keys yet, okay? You guys continue to play football. And that's what
maybe that should just be the standard across Georgia athletics.
Yeah, play fast on the field, boys. That's what you got to do.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. When we come back, we wanted to get to this yesterday on the show, but just didn't have time with everything going on. But Notre Dame making the decision to opt out of a bowl game. Could this be the end of the bowl system as we know it? We'll talk about it on the other side. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game.